everybody, and welcome to Book Hype, episode 130. Today we're going to be talking about the wacky, wild, wondrous world of Dr. Seuss. He would love that alliteration. I'm Brittany, and today I'm joined by Karen and Kristen, who are going to sit through all of my crazy Seuss pop culture trivia. How are you girls doing tonight?
Pretty good.
I'm excited.
I hope you're excited, because I got a lot stockpiled on this guy. He's one of my favorites. I never really grew up. I just keep reading Dr. Seuss all of these 26 years of my life. He's wonderful, and there's a lot of great history about him, and it is currently Read Across America Week. We're recording this on the final day of February, and Dr. Seuss's birthday is on March 2nd, and the world chooses to celebrate his birthday by hosting a Read Across America Week. So if you walk into any library or elementary school during this week, I'm sure you will see lots of striped hats and banners, and there's themes and free bookmarks. And it was my all-time favorite week in school. Minus Catholic Schools Week, because our school went all out for Catholic Schools Week. I think they just gave that to us, so it was something different. But we got to dress up. But this was definitely my favorite thing to do. We go to the library and play all sorts of reading games and get prizes, and I love it. So I just wanted to take some time to talk about Dr. Seuss and all sorts of fun stuff to go along with that. But before we get to Seuss, let's talk about what we've been reading or trying to read this week, and we'll kick it off with Kristen.
Well, I have bought a lot of books in the last week and a half, because every time I get online, somebody's put up another book that I've meant to read, and it's like on sale for 99 cents on Amazon, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to buy it now, but I don't have time to read it now. Hopefully, eventually, someday, I will have time. So I've been picking up a lot of books lately, but I did manage to listen to one audiobook for the very first time, and it was for The One Real Thing by Samantha Young. It's the first book in the Hearts Boardwalk series. The second one comes out next week, which I'm really excited about, and I have my arc, and I'm diving in as soon as I possibly can. It's my review schedule's been all crazy this week, and I'm hoping that I can really get into that book. But the first book, The One Real Thing, is really, really good. It's so different from a lot of stuff I've read. Like, it's set on the East Coast. It's, you know, it's on a boardwalk community, and these, you know, lovely small town people all love each other on the boardwalk. And there's, of course, the evil guy in town who wants to buy up the boardwalk, and they don't want to let him. And, you know, everything you expect from like a book about a really cute small town. But the story inside the story, like the romance that the book is anchored by, is so different because of the things that the main character has gone through and what she's trying to like overcome. It's really, really, it's a really interesting story. It's different from a lot of things that I've read, and I always love Samantha Young. So I highly recommend it. Her audiobooks are always great. If you haven't read anything by her, the On Dublin Street series is also really, really good, and a lot of the men have accents, so it makes it even better. Like, the books are all set in Scotland. Yeah, I'll just leave that dangling out there. It's fabulous.
I love anything set in Scotland, mostly my vacations, but I'll also take books if I can't get there myself.
Yeah, like the heroine in the first book in On Dublin Street is American, but she's an American living in Scotland. So you get her American accent, and then you have this like gorgeous Scottish guy, and you're like, oh my gosh. They're really cool. Yeah, they're great.
That's awesome. Karen, how's it going? How you doing?
It's getting rougher, guys. I'm so busy. And I hate coming on to Book Hype and not having read anything, because that's such a staple of what we do here. But I don't know. Maybe I can be the one that other people relate to when they have trouble finding time to pick up books.
I was going to say, I think it's okay, because, you know, a lot of people feel bad about not reading, and I always do. I mean, so I think it's good to have a balance of real life struggles, because life gets in the way. A lot of reading time. I read one book this week, and by read, I mean I read like 9 out of the 11 short stories of The Bane Chronicles, which is a kind of spin-off of The Mortal Instruments, and it's all about Magnus Bane's character. It's written by Cassandra Clare, Sarah Reese Brennan, and Maureen Johnson. I'm really into the Shadowhunter show, and I've been writing about it for Hypeable, so I realized that I had this on my Kindle. I don't even remember buying it. I was looking up something for an article or that I had an idea about, and I was like, you know what, let me see if this is, like, broken down into different things, and I just typed in, you know, Bane Chronicles, and it was like, purchase delivered on X date to your Amazon Kindle, and I'm like, I owned this? All right. So I started reading it at night on my phone to, you know, fall asleep, and I ended up reading most of it, so it's interesting. I think I definitely like, I don't know how much we talked about the Shadowhunter season 2 on here, but it's really departed from the book series, which is really interesting. So I kind of like going back and getting refreshed on what actually happens in the novels, because the TV series has taken a complete, some of the elements are the same, but it's really kind of a complete shift away from the books, which I'm really liking a lot. Sort of the same thing is happening with The Magicians, and it's all good. It's all good. All of these shows are doing a really great job. They're in really good hands. So looking forward to reading more of the Mortal Instruments series going forward, especially as the show heads into hiatus, because I'm really interested to see where they're departing and what threads they're still pulling from the series, and not just relying on wiki pages, because that's what I've been doing to refresh my memory. Like, did this actually happen or did it not?
Wrong Magnus, though.
I know. All right, Karen. I get it. Magnus Chase will slowly work his way in.
Oh, I'm on
her. Will go to the side.
I'm on her shit list for that too. Don't worry.
How's friend Jane doing over there, Karen?
I need to download it a third time.
Karen's clearly just on a reading protest until Brittany and I read Magnus.
Yeah, why
she hasn't read anything. Politely, she's making it up.
Yeah, she's politely saying that she's, you know, too busy, but really she just is refusing to read until we read Magnus Chase. We get it. We get it. We'll work
understand.
On it. Speaking of grammar school, let's talk about our book bites for this week. And I was curious, because whenever I think about Dr. Seuss, I immediately think about, or even Read Across America Week, I'm instantly taken back to all of my reading classes from K through 8 and just the great books and activities that took place during those years. So I was wondering, what was your favorite reading activity in grammar school? I went to a school that was K through 8, so it could be K through, what, 5th, I think, was technically grammar school, elementary school.
Well, I went to a K through 8 school, too, so I kind of think of grammar school the same way. So I'm definitely with you there. I would say the standout memories, like the things I can remember from reading activities, was we had a program called Accelerated Reader. I'm sure a lot of schools still have it. I know the elementary I went to still does. And it's like a point system based on the books you read, and you read them, and then you go to a computer and you take this little like digital quiz about it, and it basically just proves that you read the book. And I like was obsessed with having the most points. And there were probably 4 or 5 kids in our class who all really liked to read. So we were always in competition. And I just loved, you know, the competition, because I am a super competitive person, but I also like just love to read. So it was the perfect like combination of things. So I don't even remember how many points I ended up with. They usually restarted it every year and started you at zero again. Now they like accumulate because my niece is in the program, but it's really fun. Like that was always really good time. The only other thing that sticks out was in the 8th grade when my teacher decided that for literature class, he was going to read us wholes over the course of a week. And you don't get read to very much by the time you're in 8th grade. Like you do a lot of reading and you talk about books, but nobody reads to you. So it was really cool to like sit in literature and have him read wholes to us. And I just, for some reason, that sticks out in my brain too.
Awesome. How about you, Karen?
I remember the Scholastic program where they would have you read books and it gave you points, and then the points that added up, I think you could go in and get books from that. I think some of it you also had to buy, maybe. I don't know. The memory's kind of fuzzy, but it was this book fair that we had every year, maybe for a couple of days or a whole week. And it was like Christmas. It was better than Christmas. There was so much stuff there. And depending on, you know, how many points you had or your limit on points or limit on money, you could get books and erasers, and you had to figure out, you know, how you wanted to spend what you had. And I just remember it being like the best time of my life. I absolutely loved it.
I agree. I loved the Scholastic Book Fair more than anything in the entire world. They would hand out that like catalog a few weeks before the book fair would arrive in your library, and I would go through. My mom would give me a free first pass. I could go through and I'd circle like hundreds of books, and then we'd narrow it down over the course of the week leading up to the book fair. And you would put in your order and pay for it, and then those books would be waiting for you in like a nice little pile. But then you could also bring money and buy stuff. And I bought so many erasers. I was obsessed with buying erasers and bookmarks at the book fair.
Did you ever use the erasers?
Never. I think I still probably have them. Never used it. I have had Target a while ago had Dr. Seuss erasers, which is very appropriate. And they've been sitting in a drawer for like a year and a half. I just haven't even opened the plastic because I'm like, oh, I clearly need these. But yeah, I loved the book fair so much. But my favorite activity in grammar school was the reading like contests, like you guys are talking about. But if you read a certain number of books, you got a Pizza Hut coupon for a free personal pan pizza. And let me tell you, I had them to spare. My brother barely earned one. I had like 5 to 10 of them, and I would like treat the family. It was like the first time I could buy my family dinner was like in second grade because I just had Pizza Hut coupons everywhere.
That is awesome.
Oh,
yeah. I briefly remember like a summer reading program where we could earn Cedar Point tickets, which if people don't know what Cedar Point is, it's the best amusement park in the face of the planet. And like, yeah, there's nothing better than like earning a ticket or earning a coupon.
It's so much fun too, because like you feel like you're accomplishing something with each book. And I just loved it. I loved that it was encouraging people to read. I mean, a lot of people didn't do it. And, you know, there were those people, but I was not one of them. I was the person who like had all my books stacked nicely on my desk all through grammar school, and then had like 3 reading books just in case there was time in any course of any class. There was time to read. I had a book to go to. All right, it was the time of the Amber Spyglass coming out, so it was very exciting for me. So that was grammar school. But before we got to those types of contests, there was Dr. Seuss, and Dr. Seuss books were a huge deal in my house. My dad used to read them to me. My mom used to read them to me. My grandparents used to read them to me. Everyone always bought me Dr. Seuss books. And my dad loves the cartoons so much. So we would watch them, not just the Grinch, but he had like found random Cat in the Hat cartoons and any little special. He just loved them so much that Dr. Seuss was such an ingrained part of my upbringing that I took Dr. Seuss into every aspect of my life. I wrote my final college paper on a very in-depth deconstruction of 2 pages of The Cat in the Hat. Cat in the Hat only has 236 words total, and I did a 2-page deconstruction on 2 pages worth of those words. So I'm a little obsessed with them. Yeah, I was just wondering what your guys' favorite Dr. Seuss book is, just to kick off our conversation before we get to his life and some of his more adult work.
Well, I have to admit that I never really grew up on Seuss. I read probably Green Eggs and Ham the most but so that one sticks out in my brain as my favorite. But I actually became more familiar with even like The Cat in the Hat and The Lorax later on, especially when the movies came out, unfortunately. But yeah, I always thought Green Eggs and Ham was fun.
Yeah, I also was a Green Eggs and Ham fan. I used to make my grandma read it to me all the time when we went over to her house. I know we had a copy at my house, but like it just wasn't as cool as when I went to grandma's. But my little brother was obsessed with the Foot book. And I can't even tell you how many times I read the Foot book to my little brother. Oh, my gosh. It was insane. So, yeah, I love Green Eggs and Ham. Not so fond of the Foot book anymore.
Yeah, the Foot book is weird.
yeah, and he loved it. I don't know why. It's just weird.
I think that my favorite one, or the one that I at least read the most, was There's a Locket in My Pocket. I think I loved the rhymes of that book the most, but we could never find a copy of One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish. Like, we never had one, and it was so frustrating. So that was my, like, go-to one to read at school, because we didn't own it at home. So every time I was in the library, I would read One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish. And as I got older, kind of like Karen, I loved The Lorax. The Lorax, I'm looking at a figurine of The Lorax that is sitting on my desk. The Truffula Trees are just, I love them so much. I have always told, I'm terrified of getting a tattoo ever, but the only tattoo I've ever considered getting is a Truffula Tree from The Lorax, because I think it's just, it would be the perfect tattoo, because it's so cool.
That's amazing.
Do it.
We had a maintenance man at my college who I ran into just in an elevator coming down from the English department one day, and I caught the bottom of the scenery coming from a sleeve tattoo that he had. It was literally just the bottom of the sleeve. Like, you could just see, like, the wooden stump. And I said, "Excuse me, do you have a sleeve tattoo of The Lorax?" And he showed it to me, and it was gorgeous. It looked like a page right out of the Seuss book. And it was full, like, just The Lorax and the trees, and it was blue. It was so cool. I thought he was the cool. He was like, this girl is insane. But I thought he was the coolest person alive that day. Never saw him again. He probably requested to never have to go into that building again.
But that's awesome.
Oh, it was so cool. And then when we were, again, in grammar school, but we were a little bit older, I remember the librarian saying, okay, we're going to, this was how I got so into the alternate world of Dr. Seuss, where our librarian was like, okay, we don't put this Dr. Seuss book out because it's like notoriously banned and it's for a more adult audience, but I'm going to read it to you. We were like in sixth grade, so we weren't little at this point. And it was the Butter Battle book. And it's two warring sides fighting over whether they like the butter side up or the butter side down on their bread. It's been banned in a lot of places because it's like, it's all about war and, you know, like class struggle. And I never realized that some of his work is not just for kids. Like, this guy had a huge career outside of doing children's literature. This was the first time I was ever in tune with that world. I didn't learn more about it, obviously, until probably later in high school when I finally got my hands on this book called Dr. Seuss Goes to War, which is a collection of all of his political cartoons. And I figured, why not talk about a little bit of his political career and how he kind of got his start in illustration and the world, because a lot of his cartoons are coming back into popularity under the new administration, because he was illustrating what was called the America First movement. And a lot of those cartoons you could publish today, and it would be like if Dr. Seuss was writing it about current events. So, but just to backtrack a little bit, his name is Seuss, but it's Theodore Seuss Geisel, and he went to Dartmouth, and the reason he started using Seuss was because he got in trouble for underage drinking at Dartmouth and was banned from contributing to the humor magazine, The Jack-O-Lantern. I know. Getting caught for underage drinking in college is, like, a laughable offense now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I read that and I was like, this is horrible. Like, if you got caught for underage drinking now, they'd just be like, okay, go back to your dorm and go to sleep. But yeah, he was banned from contributing to the humor magazine. And so he submitted cartoons and columns under the name Seuss, and it kind of stuck after that. He couldn't get any work as a children's writer, and it took him a very long time to sell his first book, To Think I Saw It on Mulberry Street. That was the first book he ever published. So he took a job in advertising, and if you come across, you'll know immediately if it's a Seuss ad, because his drawing style is consistent. He has that very cartoonish, who-like looking people. Well, what I refer to as who's now, because they were made popular by the Grinch cartoon. But all of his characters have that Seussian quality to them. So any of his advertisements in the early, like, 30s and 40s all resemble his handiwork. But his career really kicked off when he got involved in creating political cartoons for a very liberal-leaning publication called LM Magazine. I'm going to put a link in the description to a catalog. Someone has cataloged all of his political cartoons into one place, and they're taken from the book that I have called Dr. Seuss Goes to War. And if you're interested at all in what he was doing and what he was writing about and, you know, how he was drawing and all the insight into the stories behind the cartoons, I recommend picking up that book. I couldn't find it for years. This was before, like, you know, Amazon had one-click delivery. And I actually found it in the Yale Barnes & Noble. My mom took me to visit Yale at the height of my Gilmore Girls obsession. And we found it in their Barnes & Noble. So
that is the best story ever. I love
that. That seems like fate.
Yeah, my mom did exactly what Lorelai Gilmore did. It was a very Gilmore Girl weekend. She kidnapped me, and just like Lorelai surprised Rory and took her to Harvard, my mom surprised me and took me to Yale for the weekend, and we went to all the museums, and we ate where the students ate, and she asked all the kids on campus embarrassing questions about where can we get one of the blue Yale bags, and where can we get a flag, and all this stuff. And it was great. It was really great. But when we were in the Barnes & Noble, I go, you know, this would be the bookstore to have this book. And they had one copy of the book, and we got it. And I read it the whole way home. It was a very Rory Gilmore weekend for me. Books dictate a lot of my vacations. So this is no different. But yeah, did you guys have a chance to look at any of the cartoons? Because, I mean, they definitely look like the characters from his books. But the most jarring to me is seeing, like, Hitler drawn as a Seuss character. That I remember was a very, like, striking image the first time I saw it.
Yeah, it's weird to see, like, as you said before, like, Whovian characters, that upturned nose and the roundness to their faces and their features, like, it's so Seussian. And to see it in political cartoons, like, I knew that he had, like, this whole political cartoon side to his career. Like, I had known about it intellectually, but I had never actually gone in search of them. And, like, seeing them now, I'm like, wow, like, I definitely, if I had ever just come across them, would have known. Because you see them and you know. They're very definitively his, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, the style is easily recognizable. I had never seen these before, had never even known this was a thing, but wow, this is actually, like, something. I have a degree in art history, so obviously this is, like, right up my alley, and especially when it's so connected to somebody like Dr. Seuss, which in and of itself is just an interesting topic. this is fascinating. And I also took I took a lot of classes about the Second World War and all that kind of thing. So this is like all of my interests combining into one. And I'm so shocked that I had never come across this before, like kind of mad about it, actually.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, I drop this on anyone who will listen to me, this fun fact. I'm like, well, have you seen Dr. Seuss's political cartoons? And everyone's always like, oh, like some people definitely, they know all about it. And others are like, no, I didn't know he did that. And like the first ones that I always share are the ones just of Hitler, because it's the most recognizable figure and the least politically incorrect. So Dr. Seuss was very liberal, and he was very much against racism and very against anti-Semitism and trying to be so politically correct in every facet of his life, except when he was drawing Japanese people. That was when he had a bit of a hiccup in his career, and the way he depicted them in his cartoons caused quite a stir. A lot of people believe that he created Horton Hears a Who after visiting Japan, and it was, you know, it came out in 1954, and it was dedicated to one of his Japanese friends, and it sort of, like, it was based on the wonderful world that he witnessed when he was over there. And that's not confirmed. It was, you know, written about widely, but that was the only place where he kind of had what they refer to as a blind spot in his cartooning. So he did try to make up for it in later life. But it's interesting because, like, you know, you hear, oh, Dr. Seuss did, you know, political cartoons. Like, clearly there's going to be some sort of controversy. Right now, what's happening is the cartoons that are being pulled out are all of the ones that talk about the America First movement that was going on during the time. And they're very relevant right now because of all the dominating headlines. And you could put these Seuss characters on any front page and it would look like you're talking about today's news, which is terrifying and yet kind of important to see how these are coming back into discussion. And it's fun to do it through the lens of Dr. Seuss, because it's not as terrifying if you're looking at cartoon kangaroos talk about the issues as opposed to real people. Yeah, I think this is just a fascinating, fascinating thing to look at. Beyond his political cartoon career, he got very, very involved with the problems with children's early education and what their reading materials were. So have you guys ever seen like the stories of like Dick and Jane, and they like, you know, have to brush their teeth and they have to like walk the dog? And these were very popular primers for children's reading, and they depicted these two perfect children who can never do anything wrong and never got into trouble, and no one cared about the story and therefore no one was reading. Dr. Seuss, or Theodore, whichever you want to call him. I only refer to him as Dr. Seuss because, you know, he's actually a cartoon in my head.
that makes sense.
Yeah, so he decided to challenge this article that came out in Life magazine saying, like, you know, there's a problem with our reading materials. What are we going to do to fix it? The primers aren't working. And so some publishers came together, and they gave him a list of over 300 words that every elementary school child should know. And he said, I can write a book with between 220 and 230 words. And he ended up creating a book that was only used 236 words that repeated over and over. And that was The Cat in the Hat. And the reason it was The Cat in the Hat was because he had a very, well, this is the rumor, he had a very hard time starting the book and couldn't figure out what to do with the words. And so he skimmed the list, saw cat, saw hat, they rhymed, and that's what he went off of. So he didn't just, like, have a miraculous vision of this cat in the hat. He found two words that rhymed and started from there. And that's The Cat in the Hat we know. And he got into trouble. He was very fantastic looking. It was this giant cat with this really cool hat and these creatures that came out of boxes and got into all sorts of trouble. But at the end of the day, when mom came home, everything was fine. And it taught a lesson while also getting kids actively involved in reading. That's why whenever you see what's called a beginner's book, it'll have a cat hat on it. That was always confusing to me as a child, because beginner's books all have the cat in a hat on them, but they're not all by Dr. Seuss. And I remember being able to be very, like, in tune with whether or not I was being read or reading a non-Dr. Seuss book, because I was like, this has the cat in the hat on it, but it's clearly not part of the Dr. Seuss collection. Like, this is subpar material that I'm reading. I was a very picky child.
You had good taste.
But yeah, from there, he went on to write tons of other books. 16 of them currently remain on the Publisher Weekly's top 100 hardcover children's books of all time. So they're not going anywhere, and I buy my nieces them for every holiday. They have quite the collection already. I think I have to actually go over there and see which ones they have, because I'm pretty sure I'm about to start duplicating. One of the more interesting things about Seuss is that he died in 1991, but his last book came out 2 years ago. When this news hit, I think we might have talked about it on Book Hype, but it was probably the most exciting news to hit me in a long time. And, you know, the Golden Compass, as you heard last week, is very emotionally charging for me. But when it was announced that What Pet Should I Get was hitting shelves, it was all bets are off. I'm going to be the first one at the bookstore to pick this up. His second wife was cleaning out drawers, and, you know, just, she's been very good about preserving everything her husband's hand had touched, and it's all in museums like across the world, and there's a Dr. Seuss museum, and she just preserves everything and gives everything over. She wants everyone to enjoy his work. And she found this manuscript that was basically finished. The only thing was that it wasn't colored. And so people colored it, and they stuck to Seuss's colors, and voila, 2015, we get What Pet Should I Get? I'm hoping that there's another whole big mess of books that he also didn't finish, and they're going to slowly come out over my lifetime. But I'm not holding my breath.
This little treasure trove, just waiting.
Yeah. The gift that keeps on giving.
That's pretty much the gist of Seuss's career and just all the really awesome stuff that he's done. He was a really amazing illustrator, and he's done so much artwork for different people, for different companies. You could look and just never emerge if you get into a Seuss deep dive, which I did a few nights ago, gathering stuff for this conversation. He drew for 70 years, and so there's 70 years worth of material. He did some awesome, like, pop art looking stuff. He created this awesome print of these weird houses with eyes, but they all, like, fit together, and, like, it's really creepy. He has some, like, really weird experimental ceramics that he's done. If you line them all up, you can say, yes, every single one of these came from Dr. Seuss, because they all just have that look, and it's such a classic look, and I'm glad that there's not a huge amount of controversy behind him. He cheated on his first wife. All right. That was a bad move.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah, you drew Japanese people really not nicely, but you tried to make up for it. Okay. He remains one of the good ones. He's one of my favorites. And I love introducing kids to him. Anyone who I know who's, like, pregnant, I buy a collection of Dr. Seuss books and I send them to them. Instead of, like, an actual gift that, you know, diapers that they could use right away, they're going to, their six-day-old could look at Dr. Seuss pictures instead. But I want to talk about some of the adaptations, because I really like every single one. The only one that I have not seen is The Lorax, mainly because I'm nervous it'll ruin it, because it's I wasn't a huge, huge fan of Horton Hears a Who, and The Lorax is done in a similar manner, and I love the story of The Lorax, and I kind of want to leave that untouched. But I want to kick it off with the most well-known, The Grinch. And there's the 50s Chuck Jones cartoon, and or 60s, I think. And then there's the Jim Carrey version. And I want to hear if Karen has seen both, which one she prefers.
There's a right answer and a wrong answer, isn't there?
There is, but I will preface it by saying I do like both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But there still is a right answer.
Really love both of them. I will say, yes, I do prefer the Jim Carrey version, just because I think he does a fantastic job, and the fact that it's live action and they were still able to pull that off, I think it's just really brilliant, and the world really comes alive in that movie. But the animated version is a classic, and you cannot go wrong with it. So I really do love them both.
People in our generation had the joy of growing up with the Chuck Jones cartoon, and then, you know, somewhere in the middle of your mm-hmm. teens, you got this gift that is Jim Carrey as the Grinch. So I loved that cartoon growing up. Like, we watched that and the Claymation movies every Christmas. Like, my sister and my brothers and I would all, you know, snuggle up on the couch and we'd watch cartoons. And it's, you know, it's a classic and it's in the repertoire. Like, I hate going a Christmas without watching it at least once. But I also have a special place in my heart for the Jim Carrey adaptation. It's just, you know, you don't assume that anyone can bring a Dr. Seuss book to live action and have it feel anything near as magical. And they got, I think, as close as anyone will ever get to that actually happening, because Jim Carrey was absolutely fantastic as the Grinch, and just everyone in that movie did a good job. So yeah, I love them both. I don't want to pick.
I am going to pick and say the cartoon's better, but I agree. I loved the Jim Carrey version, and it's so funny. And the stuff that they added to make it a full feature-length film was, it fit so perfectly, but it kept all of the great parts of the original. It kept, like, you know, the You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch song. You know, it had the speech of, you know, all the noise. And then when he's like, and I'm speaking in verse, like, you know, he's like, just these little lines that they add to it. It was just so well done, and everything looked, I want to go to that Whoville so badly, because it looked so cool. And, you know, his lair in Mount Crumpet was so awesome. I was blown away by it. And we watched that movie almost as much as we would have watched the cartoon growing up, because my nieces and nephew grew up with the Jim Carrey version, because that was out when they were little, and my niece was obsessed with it. She watched it all year round, which was fine with me, but yeah, I agree. I think they did a phenomenal job with that. And then there was another live action one that came out after it, which was The Cat in the Hat. That one is fine, but it's not as good. There is a cartoon, but, yeah, Cat in the Hat as well, which is in the same style as the cartoon Grinch, which also isn't that great. It's better than, I think, the real-life live-action movie with Mike Myers plays the Cat in the Hat.
I hate that movie.
Good. Good job, Karen. Points to Karen.
I got one. Yeah, the live-action Cat in the Hat is the only movie I've ever bought that I watched once and refused to watch again.
It's rough. The only part of that movie that I could watch on repeat, on a loop, is the cooking segment, because I think it's hilarious. I thought that is the only saving grace of that entire movie. Well, that and Sean Hayes is in it, and I love Sean Hayes in anything. he plays the fish and the boss of the mother. Oh, and Alec Baldwin is the... Wow, that's actually a really good cast. But anyway, the cooking segment with the cat, I think, is just so funny. What else is there? Horton Hears a Who. The first time I saw it in the movie theater, I fell asleep. It was because I had stayed up the night before. I'd flown back from Florida at like 4 in the morning and then stayed up and then went to go see that to like kill an afternoon and just slept right through it. It was rough. But I have seen it since, and I did enjoy that with the more CGI-ish animation.
Yeah, I still have not seen Horton Hears a Who. I think it came out right before my niece was really of movie watching age, so I missed it, because I've seen a lot of kids' movies because of her in the last, like, 4 years or so. I did see The Lorax, but I have not yet seen Horton Hears a Who. I'm sure at some point I will.
What did you think of The Lorax?
I don't think I have ever read The Lorax. I knew it was a Seuss movie, obviously. You know it as soon as you see an ad. And the ads were driving me crazy. And I had seen that, like, reviews weren't so great. But I enjoyed it. It was fine. I didn't love it. Like, it wasn't the greatest thing ever. But, you know, it didn't bother me. Again, I didn't know the story. So if it departs from the original, I wouldn't have known to be disappointed.
I don't think I will see it. That's one that I'm okay with leaving off just, of my Dr. Seuss complete list.
Just treasure it in its original beloved form and call it a day.
Yeah.
I have not seen Horton Hears a Who. I wanted to, but kind of just never got around to it. I watched The Lorax because it was on Netflix. I don't know if it still is, but it made me cry. I really liked it. Of course, I don't know anything about the book, so this is just pure, like, movie magic kind of stuff. But I thought it was a really good story, obviously an important one, and really fun. It was funny, and it was lively, and I just obviously had an emotional connection to it. But I can totally understand liking the story too much to want to watch the adaptation.
Plus, isn't Danny DeVito the Lorax? I feel like that just would ruin it for me.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think that was really the main driver. As soon as I heard that Danny, I could not put his voice on the Lorax in my head. I'm like, no, because the Lorax is so cute, and he has, like, this big fluffy scruffy beard, and, like, he's supposed to talk, like, you know, in my head he talks like he has, like, a very nervous voice, and it's like a, like, he's trying to be loud and boisterous, but it's, like, muffled by his mustache. So I'm happy with that voice that exists only in my insane head. If you ever want to know and have heard me speak about anything, it's really like a Dr. Seuss world up in there 24/7, so this is just really highlighting some of the more extreme aspects of my mind. Right now and through the end of this week, but all year long in our hearts, it is Read Across America time. And just to give a quick wrap up and background about it, the National Education Association builds a nation of readers through its signature program, Read Across America, and it's over 20 years old, and it does happen year-round, but this is the week where the libraries are celebrating it, and people are dressing up in silly cat costumes, and kids are coming home after making Dr. Seuss hats, and I just hope that kids know what the hats are from, but as long as they associate it with reading, I'm actually okay with it. I'll leave you with a Dr. Seuss quote that is, they use it mostly for Read Across America, but it's also just really cute and adorable. You're never too old, too wacky, too wild to pick up a book and read with a child. Buy kids Dr. Seuss books and not diapers. That's my motto. If you learned anything from this podcast, keep the dream alive, people. He's a good guy. There'll be links to all of his political cartoons and some stories about the relevance of his cartoons today if you want to check them out in our show notes.
Can I just say that looking through this Dr. Seuss art collection, the weird taxidermy might be my favorite thing.
Yeah.
These things are so weird. Like, I saw a lot of it was, like, paintings and sketches, and they had stuff, you know, that was done with ink and stuff that was done with, like, colored pencil, or they had all kinds of different categories, and I was like, weird taxidermy? But, like, it's so cool. It's, like, actual representations of, like, characters that could have been in any book that he wrote.
And they're all, like, named really weird things.
Yeah.
Oh, they're, like, it's really cool.
Yeah. So, if you're just, you know, have a minute to look through it, man, the taxidermy is just really cool and crazy.
It could be something different.
Did you ever think you'd be saying that?
No. No, I never imagined it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dr. Seuss.
There's a lot of really interesting stuff that you could check out. The Art of Dr. Seuss website is really, really cool. There'll be a link to it. All right, so that wraps up our discussion on Dr. Seuss and Read Across America and a trip into Brittany's insane head. We'll be back soon with some more awesome book news, and we got a few surprises in store, so be sure to check us out and stick around for the conversations that are coming your way. Until then, I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.